Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic fight of Black people and the imperatives that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.uslifting.us.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, and then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Block Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Block Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to uslifting.us.com. You can reach the ULU community through the members only portal. When you register for the ULU community, please use the same name you used when you joined ULU itself. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for tonight's conversation is Brother Shabaka, who, like me, is a member of Ulu. Tonight's discussion topic is, why are Africans and Blacks pessimistic about their position in the world? Peace, Brother Shabaka. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, peace to you, Sister Q. I am doing very well. Thank you for asking, and greetings and peace to the family and listeners who are tuning in this evening.
It looks like a very interesting subject you have for tonight, Brother Shabaka. So tell us, why are Africans and Blacks pessimistic about their position in the world?
Thank you for the question, Sister, and the opportunity to dwell into that. You notice the term is African and Blacks, to sort of like give a separation. I don't really separate them, but I wanted to indicate when we think of Africans, we usually think of Africans on the continent and not necessarily Africans distributed in the diaspora. All right, we refer to many names, as you know and aware of, African descendants, mm-hmm. Afro descendants, African descendants, African American, Black Americans, you know, a whole range of things. Even the N word mm-hmm. is sometimes referred to us as. Mm-hmm. All right, but I wanted to know that I'm talking about the same thing, but I'm talking about on both sides of the Atlantic. You know, you get a pessimistic view from some, and the question is, why is that pessimistic view? And let me begin by offering this little clip that I'm about to share with the family is from a sister who was giving a presentation at one of these little TED groups. You know, you might see them sometimes in YouTube where, you know, people like Bill Gates and a number of other people have given talks to a group of mostly Europeans, all right? But they are giving these talks in hope of transmitting information. Now, what they do with the information is I have no idea. But this young lady from the continent, all right, is giving a talk. I want you to listen to her. Family, let's listen to what she has to say.
One thing that keeps me puzzled, despite having studied finance and economics at the world's best universities, the following question remains unanswered. Why is it that 5,000 units of our currency is worth one unit of your currency, where we are the ones with the actual gold reserves? It's quite evident that the aid is in fact not coming from the West Africa, but from Africa to the Western world. The Western world depends on Africa in every possible way, since alternative resources are scarce out here. So how does the West ensure that the free aid keeps coming? By systematically destabilizing the wealthiest African nations and their systems, and all that backed by a huge PR campaign, leaving the entire world under the impression that Africa is poor and dying and merely surviving on the mercy of the West. Well done, Oxfam, UNITA, Red Cross, Life Aid, and all the other organizations that continuously run multi-million dollar advertisement campaigns depicting charity porn to sustain that image of Africa globally. Ad campaigns paid for by innocent people under the impression to help with their donations. While one hand gives under the flashing lights of cameras, the other takes in the shadows. We all know the dollar is worthless, while the euro is merely charged with German intellect and technology, maybe some Italian pasta. How can one expect donations from nations that have so little? It's super sweet of you to come with your colored paper in exchange for our golden diamonds. But instead, you should come empty-handed, filled with integrity and honor. We want to share with you our wealth and invite you to share with us. The perception is that a healthy and thriving Africa would not disperse its resources as freely and cheaply, which is logical. Of course, it would instead sell its resources at world market prices, which in turn would destabilize and weaken Western economies established on the post-colonial free meal system. Last year, the IMF reports that 6 out of 10 of the world's fastest growing economies are in Africa, measured by their GDP growth. The French Treasury, for example, is receiving about $500 billion year in, year out. Foreign exchange reserves from African countries based on colonial debt they forced them to pay. Former French President Jacques Chirac stated in an interview recently that we have to be honest and acknowledge that a big part of the money in our banks comes precisely from the exploitation of the African continent. In 2008, he stated that without Africa, France will slide down in the rank of a third world power. This is what happens in the human world, the world we have created. Have you ever wondered how things break in nature? One would assume that in evolution the fittest survives. However, in nature, any species that is overhunting, overexploiting the resources they depend on as nourishment, natural selection will sooner or later take a predator out because it upsets the balance. One thing that keeps me puzzled.
All right, Sister Q.
Yes.
This is a video, and so you should have seen the faces of the Europeans who was listening to her presentation. Now, the presentation was longer. All right, this was just a clip. The sister's name is Williams. I think she's from Liberia. All right, but I'm not sure. And she was allowed, you know, she has many degrees in economics, and she was allowed to give this presentation to TED and supposedly these so-called influential people that attended that particular presentation. All right.
Okay.
The key is that people are exchanging their dollars or their euros, which is worth nothing more than the ink that's on the paper. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence of exchanging this, they bring out the resources, which is the mineral wealth, all right, and then give the paper, which is inflationary, all right, to the Africans, all right. So they can never succeed because they are trading worthless paper for valuable minerals. I want you to keep that in mind. Now, I want to play the second clip for the family, okay, and we can get in some discussion. And this is by Minister Farrakhan. Actually was introduced by a brother, all right, who's laying the groundwork. But then you hear Farrakhan, and we want to really discuss what he's talking about.
Okay. You know, Minister Farrakhan had done an interview a while back, and he was talking about immigrants coming to the black community. You know, a lot of times everybody say that, well, we're so broke, we're so poor, we don't have anything. But yet the minister is going to point out how all these immigrant groups come into this country and come to our community so they can start making their bag. Let's go, Rose.
If we don't have money, why are the Arabs here? If we don't have money, why are the Koreans here? If we don't have money, why is every immigrant that comes to America find their way into the black community to build their empire, their American dream on the black nightmare? So we have got to change that reality.
And the minister is not lying. I've seen growing up in Port Arthur, where I'm from, how Vietnamese people came into Port Arthur.
Port Arthur is on the Texas side, just after you cross the border from Louisiana.
Okay.
It's an enclave of Africans, all right, but it's that as you're going on Route 10, you know, going through Louisiana, then you cross over, all right, and you put Port Arthur. All right, there you are, right there.
Okay.
You know. All right, listen to the brother as he introduced, comment on what Farrakhan just said.
Went into the black community, because I remember I used to live across the street to a family of Vietnamese people. We didn't have no Vietnamese in our neighborhood, but a group of Vietnamese people moved in. They had about 10 people in that house. And they got their stores, they got their shrimp boats, they got all the things living right there in the black community. They used to go catch shrimp, and then they would be riding around in a van talking about, go ask your mama if she want to buy some shrimp. I'm just saying, that's how they would say back then. And, you know, like, hey, mama, there's a Vietnamese lady out here telling me want to buy some fresh caught shrimp. They just caught, you know. So, oh, shoot, you ain't got to go to the store, Vietnamese lady got it. So a lot of times, that's how we would be getting shrimp in the neighborhoods from the Vietnamese people, right? But they eventually get their bag up, and they end up moving out and going to the white place where they want to leave them, right? All these different immigrants do that. You got the Indians come in there, the Arabs come in the black community with their businesses. Everybody come in there. But they want you to believe that we have no money. Now, collectively, we have a lot of money, but the problem with black folk is that we don't appropriate our money because we don't have a code. You understand what I'm saying? If we actually had a financial code in how we move and spending our money, then we would be a lot better. But we don't have any kind of code. Maybe individually, maybe even groups of us have a particular code we move by financially. But you have too many wrecked fences. On this channel, I've covered many times where you've had Asian people attacking black people in nail salons. And we're making videos talking about, okay, black women, stay out of them doggone nail salons. Stay out of them beauty supply stores. They will argue you down, fight you, talking about they need their nails done, they need their weave. All those sort of things that they have said over the years. And while black men was protesting a few of them, they show right back up. You remember Brother Tyrone Muhammad some years ago went to a nail shop, checked the people for putting hands on the sister, broke their window and everything. Tyrone Muhammad got arrested. Tyrone Muhammad went right back out there and seen a line of black women going in the same place, and he got arrested. That's why no other group respects us, because we have no code, we have no honor either, because other groups can disrespect us, and we'll still pick up our dollars and give right to them. But let a black person be in business. First of all, you want a discount that you never ask the Asians and the Arabs and anybody else for white people. You never ask them for a discount. Well, black folks, you demand a discount. You get mad if they price something a certain way, but you never tell the Asians about their prices or white people or anybody else. Whatever the price the white man tells you to pay, you're going to pay it, and you're going to be happy doing it. Well, black folks,
if we don't have money, why are the Arabs here? If we don't have money, why are the Koreans here? If we don't have money, why is every immigrant that comes to America find their way into the black community to build their empire, their American dream on the black nightmare? So we have got to change that reality.
All right, Sister Q, I'm going to stop it here. I want us to have a little discussion on that, because remember now, the implication is that we're pessimistic. And usually when you're pessimistic, it's because something is not going right or it's going the way you expect it to go. All right? Would you agree to that?
Yes.
All right? And I'm sure you can look at experiences in your own particular life. All right? And then the sum total of the experiences that other folks in our community have, things ain't going right. They're pessimistic, particularly if what is not going right continuously happens for over a longer period of time and it doesn't seem like your plans are materializing. All right, so you get a little pessimistic. All right, now listen to what Brother Farrakhan said. All right, he says these other groups are coming in our community. All right, now they're not just coming in because they found that community. When they came over here, all right, it was directed to our communities. And provisions was made that they could set up shop in our community, while at the same time, all right, the banks denied capital capital to us to furnish and make our own businesses, all right? But they allow the Vietnamese to get a stipend of some sort, all right, low-interest loan or what have you, or grants, all right, and open up their business, mm-hmm. all right? And they don't mind staying, and we used to didn't mind staying it either. You know, when Grandma was taking care of all those kids, you know, and the family, you know, we didn't mind at one time. But, yeah, they didn't mind, you know, staying 5 to 10 people in the household, all right, and taking care of business, all right? And so they took care of business. So they would give it, they were getting the money, all right, that they made mm-hmm. from us. They used that money, all right, and place it in their depository, all right, and then use that mm-hmm. money when they got enough of it to move out of the areas in which they had the business, or they might have a place of residence outside of the community anyway. All right, so I'm saying when we see that, what do we see? I'm going and spending money, all right? I'm just going to use this mm-hmm. simple case. I'm spending money in your establishment. You're taking that money out of my community, all right? And so there is nothing being placed back in that community, either in hiring, all right, in which case you would say that there's some money going back, all right, or that you yourself would tend to partner with or form alliances with or patronize black businesses that are happen to be in that community. But there are not many because the system is set up that it doesn't allow you to create those businesses. All right, why is that? Well, simply because it would be competitive, right? It's as simple as that. Because more than likely, if you saw those businesses that were servicing you, you would tend to look at those businesses, support those businesses, and it'd be very difficult for a community which would be alien to the life of the people that's in that community, all right, to be able to easily set up and get the kind of commercial operation going that they would like. All right, on the continent of Africa, something similar is happening, except the resources that they have are the valuable resources that is needed in order to sustain Europe and America and the rest of what we would call the Western world, all right? Mm-hmm. And so they're pessimistic because they're working hard, they're getting pennies while the resources are being taken out, all right, and then sent to Europe, all right, manufactured, sold, and if we want any of the manufactured goods, we have to pay top dollar or higher in order to acquire them. Or we're only getting, as the sister said, you know, for every 5,000 units of currency we have, all right, is only equivalent to one unit of currency, all right, the oppressive, all right, or the colonialist had. All right, so you can see that we're getting poor, we're working harder, we're getting these minerals that everybody is using, and when we look around and say, well, what is our life like? All right, the thing is, something is not right. You know, I see it day in and day out, it's not going the way I expected, and I'm working hard because the propaganda, and this is crucial, in fact, you talked about it, you know, on the shows that you have, particularly about the fifth generation of warfare, which tries to affect your mind. The propaganda is so heavy, all right, that it teaches us we got to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, I guess it is, even if you have no boots, all right. And you see the Africans going out there working without shoes in order to get the kind of money that they would have, which would help to create what they believe would be wealth. Because they got what the world needs, but they're not just seeing it. That's pessimistic. That's pessimism, all right, being created on both sides of the Atlantic. We see ourselves being exploited by communities. And I'm not criticizing the Asians or whomever. Asians have a plan. They come over here, all right, they work. Mm-hmm. They work hard. And they believe the propaganda that we don't work as Africans over here, even though we build the country. We don't work, but we build the country. Contradiction, but all right. That's a lie. We got to look at that, and that's the propaganda mm-hmm. that's go out. That's the fifth generation of warfare that you and I on parts have talked about. So mm-hmm. we believe it, and the people who believe it are the people that look like you and I. All right. So we begin to criticize ourselves for an expectation that we see is not materializing in the very near future when we are doing everything that the American propaganda dream said that we should be doing. All right, and I said that. Now let me get a little bit more deep with you, sister. Let's roll with this.
Mm-hmm.
I have a report that was done by the Pew Research Center. That's Pew, P-E-W, Research Center.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this report was released August 30th, 2022. Now, let me give you the title. Family, I want you to copy this down. It's the Pew Report. It's the Pew Research Center that put out this report. All right, Pew is spelled P-E-W. You can go on the Internet, just type the name in there, and this is the name of the title of that report. Black Americans have a clear vision for reducing racism, but little hope it will happen. Let me give you the title again so that if you're copying it down, you can go and get this report for yourself and read it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's 127 pages, but, you know, you can select because you got a table of content. You can selectively go through there and see what you would like to look at first or second, and then come back, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Black Americans have a clear vision for reducing racism, but little hope it will happen. This is a subtitle. Many say U.S. institutions should be rebuilt to ensure fair treatment. All right, many say. Now, there's some vagueness here. Who are the many that say this, all right? All right?
Right.
And number one, you got to ask yourself, all right, to whose advantage is to rebuild these institutions, to make them fairer? You see that assumption right there, sister? All right,
mm-hmm.
I got to make the institutions fairer. Let me give you some stats that they quote, all right?
Okay.
But first, let me read this. This is extremely important. This is also part of the report.
Okay.
All right, listen, family. I want you to listen to this. After George Floyd's murder, half of Black Americans expected policy changes to address racial inequality. I'm going to read the rest of it, but I don't want to stop here. Expected it from whom?
Right.
Keep that in mind. That's my question. Expected it from whom?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me keep going. In September 2020, 65%, now the Pew does a lot of data and surveys. They do surveys, they collect a lot of data, information, and then they form an assessment, and they report on a conclusion that they reach as a consequence of analysis of the data that they collect. All right, so this is based on the Pew's assessment of the data, and they are, you know, this could be true or false. You know,
mm-hmm.
farther from the truth, could be close to the truth, or neither, all right? 65,
right.
Now they collected this because they did a survey. 65% of Black adults who said increased attention to issues of race and racial inequality has led to major policy changes to address racial inequality. But, by 2021,
okay.
Now this was in September 2020, but
mm-hmm.
by 2021, many did not see improvements to Black people's lives and did not expect to. All right? But
okay.
by 2021, many did not see improvements to Black people's lives, all right, as well as, now I want you to keep this in mind, 8 in 10, this according to the Pew report, this is not what Chewbacca's saying. It's in that report
mm-hmm.
that I just gave you the title of. You can go online and get it. 8
mm-hmm.
in 10 say they have personally experienced discrimination because of their race or ethnicity, and also say discrimination is the main reason many Black people cannot get ahead. Now, this is what their survey, from the questions that they had in their survey, they got
mm-hmm.
80% of the people, you know, saying, hey, it's discrimination. That's what's holding me back. All right?
Right.
Now,
mm-hmm.
even so, continue the reading, even so, many African Americans of many black Americans, have a clear vision for how to achieve change when it comes to racial inequality. All right, this includes, and we're talking about what black Americans say are the changes that's needed. This includes support for significant reforms to or complete overhaul of several U.S. institutions to ensure fair treatment, particularly the criminal justice system, political engagement, primarily in the form of voting, support for black businesses to advance black communities. Now, this is a heartbreak for me, but I got to say it.
Okay.
About 6 in 10 black adults say racism and police brutality are extremely big problems for black in the United States today. However, nearly 8 in 10, 80%, black adults say white people would be or would make good political allies. Let me say that again now. About 6 in 10, 60%,
mm-hmm.
black adults say racism and police brutality are extremely big problems for black people in the United States. Nearly
mm-hmm.
8 in 10 black adults say white people would make good political allies. Black adults were also asked about the effectiveness of black economic and political independence in moving them towards equality. Now, this should interest us, particularly this family.
Mm-hmm.
About 4 in 10, 40% say black ownership of businesses in black communities would be an extremely or very effective strategy for moving towards racial equality, while roughly 30% say the same about establishing a national black political party. About a quarter of blacks, about 27%, say having black neighborhoods governed entirely by black effective elected officials would be extremely or very effective in moving black people towards equality. Now, the key word here, Sister Q, and please stop me and let's wrestle with this. It seems to me
mm-hmm.
that the key word is that we have conceded that we're not equal or that we're not operating in an equal capacity, all right, and that policy has to be changed. Policy has to be changed institutionally, mostly in the political
mm-hmm.
era, while at the same time we feel that white folks will make good allies. Now, these are the same white folks
that
are
not
the descendants.
Compute.
Go ahead, sister. Roll with it.
No, that does not compute, Brother Shabbat, because you're saying that black people need to do our own. We need to have our own businesses. We need to have our own educational system. Everything, we need to have our own. This is what people are, what the black folks answering these questions are saying, and yet at the same time they say they need white allies. That's to say that we can't do this by ourselves. That, and I would take that would be just the statement that we can't do this alone, or that, you know, we're not smart enough, we don't have the capacity, all of this negative feeling about ourselves is what I think I would identify as pessimism, the negating of to happen.
Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree with you and family. I want you to look at this because the community of folks that I'm talking about are those people who are supposed to be, in other words, the people who would take the time to do the survey are what we would call, all right, the uppers in the society, because they have the time to sit down and address your service. Everybody else is bustling, working, or trying to find work, all right? So
mm-hmm.
we're talking mm-hmm. about, all right, and a significant number of these who are in this group, all right, are what we might classify as nationalists. Now, if the nationalists feel that there is a possibility that we can ally with whites, all right, now I want to go along. You can, you know, I know some white folks, okay? Talk to them. But, you know, politically, mm-hmm. when I wish to address concerns that affect my people, all right, mm-hmm. as a consequence of historically looking at what his ancestors did to my ancestors, all right, and knowing that he has acquired a certain degree of privilege as a consequence of building upon what his ancestors did to my people, I might be, not mm-hmm. might be, I would be reluctant, not only reluctant, I would think that I would be mad, all right, if I thought in some way I could politically collaborate with this person who historically his family has shown would undermine at every opportunity my people or me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, mm-hmm. But we have nationalists who believe that. We have people, Pan-Africanists to some degree, who believe that there's nothing wrong with some white folks. Okay, well, mm-hmm. Who are the some that you are identifying that there's not wrong with them? And then define for me what they would have to do to make them all right, that you can align with them. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So,
but
I want to go.
The point, I think, with. Go ahead, Brother Shabazz.
No, I want you to go ahead, sister. I want we don't have any calls coming in, do we?
No, not. Let me check
okay.
again.
Yeah,
no,
go ahead and make
yet.
Your point, please.
The point that I'm making is to say that somebody, that another group of people are going to care about us as much as we care about ourselves and are going to work for our advancement at the expense of their own self and their own people, that's crazy. Nobody does that except us. I mean, we always looking to help other groups of people, but that's because, as I think it's Brother Thurman that says, we're out of our African minds. Every entity
yes.
takes care of self and home, community, you know, and spread it out. We're saying that we in our community can't handle our own business, so someone else should come from outside of our community into our community, put their own self-interest aside to help us. That's not rational thinking. That's not rational thinking.
Not rational thinking. Doesn't make any sense. And as Farrakhan said, and the brother also, we see the Koreans, we see the Asians, the Arabs,
mm-hmm.
we see everybody coming into our community. On the continent, mm-hmm. we see the Chinese, all right, the Japanese, all right, we see the Russians. Of course, the Western Europeans have already been there. Everybody's there mm-hmm. doing their thing and promising, you know, that what they're doing, you know, after we achieved independence on the continent, after we started our mm-hmm. civil rights movement here and started getting some of the mayors, now governors,
mm-hmm.
and congresspeople, and even a black president, now the so-called
right.
black female vice president, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We still don't see any progress or anything in the foreseeable future, and even during the generation of our kids as a positive incentive, you know, to support this system, all right? Which is why, even though 90% of black folks are in the Democratic Party, there are a large number of black folks that don't vote, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
They have made up in their mind, you know, that even though the Black Party gives the impression that it cares for us and all this, the black so-called power elite that we have in the Congress and Senate, you know, are not doing anything for the constituents that they supposedly represent. All right, so right. The pessimism. All right, you can see the pessimism sets in. I can't see anything. I'm doing what I'm propaganda wise. I am told I should be doing, but as a consequence, I still don't see it. I'm still struggling. All right, during the past three and a half years, you know, 50% of black businesses was lost as a consequence of the COVID pandemic. Also, All right, there was a disproportion of lives lost, you know, when COVID hit. In fact, I heard one sister say, why isn't the black community, you know, engaged the black lawyers in class action suit against the government, you know, for how we were handled when the so-called outbreak started, and then the effects from the vaccine, which we were mandated to take and got injured and got no remediation from because there was no liability for the pharmaceuticals or, all right, the government, all right, who instructed us, guided us, and mandated that we take these injurious drugs. So, again, we see all this, and we see no remedy in the future. So we become very pessimistic and become political inert, you know, and don't do anything. All right. Now,
right. Brother Shubaka, you have a hand up, so you can finish your thought now.
Yeah, I'll finish my thought. Let's bring the hands in.
Okay.
Greetings, Sister Keenan. Call
with the last 4 digits. Oh, peace.
Am I on?
Go ahead. Yes, you're on.
I was saying greetings, Sister Q, Brother Shubaka. Thank you for the topic this evening. Fascinating and very important question. And Brother Shubaka, thank you for the two clips. I think the first clip was a sister out of Sierra Leone, Malence Bart Williams, from an address called
That's right.
Change Your Channel. It's a good YouTube clip. People would be really informed to check into that. And then, of course, the Minister Farrakhan's remarks are right on point. And everything that you've said seems to paint the picture that, as Dr. Greg Carr would say, individuals can't beat institutions. And so the weakness we see in our community is a lack of institutional muscle. And that's why ULU becomes an important tool for us because it enables us to develop strength in the economic arena. Once there is a strong economic institution that is family-centered and collectively owned and controlled by us, doesn't that then allow us to exert more political influence? It could actually push the Democratic Party to do something. And it certainly would change the way we view ourselves. In other words, we flock to these other communities to get their services and their products. And then when they don't treat us with respect, we get offended, but we still go back over and over and over. So it seems that everything that you've said to this moment suggests and points to the need for us to really build a very robust and dynamic economic institution that is collectively owned versus privately owned. So I'll jump off and hear your response to that thought.
Thank you for that, Brother Auntie.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Auntie. You are correct. In fact, I'm glad you stole my thunder. I was going to talk about, you know, the importance of ULU, all right, as we examine the pessimism that we see running across. And I remember that I'm saying that these are not only the average Joe and Ann, these are pessimism we're seeing, all right, demonstrated also in the nationalist community because we seem to be wavering, all right? And in fact, we seem to be, all right, acting like we're defeated. Yes, we have some we have some rumbles, but we can't act defeated, you know, because keep in mind, we don't have the resources to bestow the kind of trauma that the European has and will in order to sustain his control over the economy. All right, it's just our planning and continuing to do that that will do that. So, yeah, I really thank you. It's very important, and I'm going to talk more about the importance of Ulu in this as we go through. I wanted to probably
Brother
end a little bit on this, sister. Yes.
We got one more hand up. Can we take that right quick? And,
yeah, please.
And close this out. Okay. Caller with the last four digits, 8912, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question.
Greetings, family. This is Brother Thurman calling from Richmond. The thing I want to say to the family is that the brother and Minister Farrakhan clip was posted on the Us Lifting Us Facebook page this past Wednesday. It's still there. If anybody wanted to go and hear a repeat of what Brother Chewbacca has shared. And I also want to emphasize that Us Lifting Us has got a phrase that's been out for some years now, and that is we either take control of the economics of our community or forever be at the mercy of others. And to be at the mercy of others is downright disgusting, that we would be okay to be at the mercy of others. And we've got to, among the things that we got to do, just like the economics, politics, and the political power, we've got to have a mindset change. And so I was looking at a message from Marcus Garvey a few minutes ago that said the most powerful thing that we could do for our people is to be about race first. And if we're race first, then if the people abuse us, if the people like Minister Farrakhan said, come in specifically into our community with shrimp boats or whatever, and wigs and fakery, and we are not thinking race first, yes, we'll do what the people do, go to them. And so they disrespect our people. The brother goes into the beauty shop or so-called beauty shop, and we got to get clarity about things. And Africans historically had, in historical Africa, had periods called high culture. We got to come back to high culture and African deep thought. And why would we have someone abuse us, rob us, and still I was trying to emphasize real, real strongly, we got to have a thinking, a change of thinking, a lifestyle change in our thinking. And everything that we do every day of our life, every year, every month. And if we are going to go forth and celebrate them, 4th of July and so on, and Pilgrim's Day, and at the same time support their indoctrination, their deceiving us and duping us to eat ourselves sick, to do nutricide to ourselves, we're buying right. We shouldn't do any better, because when we're eating ourselves sick, we are malnourished and our mind's eyes not open. And it just goes on and on. So we got to have a lifestyle or change in our thinking. And when we do that, the other things will fall into place. Race first. We got to do that. And we can't just gripe about, if we gripe about whatever they're doing, and still go back to them. If you were in the mindset every day of being race first, you wouldn't go back to them. You create your own. I'm done.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brother Thurman. Really appreciate that. I want to go back just to reinforce just the comment that you made where we have to have a change in thinking. It says here 8 in 10 black adults say white people would make good political allies. And then it goes on to say, it says, now look, it says about 4 in 10. That's a good percentage, but it should be it should be higher than that. It should be over 50. It said 4 in 10 say black ownership of all businesses in black neighborhoods would be extremely or very effective strategy for moving towards racial equality. Well, we're not trying to be racially equal. We're just trying to take care of ourselves, all right? And so people, that means then over 60%, you know, are still got the mindset that, you know, we can all live together, all right? And then it goes on to say 3 in 10, 30%, say the same about establishing a national black political party. So that means everybody's not comfortable. That means the majority of people still see us in an integrated party. All right, so there's a lot of work to be done, okay? And, I mean, I'm in argument with some Pan-Africanist who says, all right, can we trust Kennedy? Now, I said, as black people, no. his agenda is to take care of whites, all right?
Absolutely.
What he's saying is important, but his agenda is for the white constituency, all right, that he has been parading for decades, all right, particularly those who have been harmed as a consequence of medicine, pharmaceuticals, and what have you, pollution and all that other kind of stuff. All right, but he's looking at, because he still say, that we got to go back and get our freedoms again, all right, the same way that I guess Trump says we got to, you know, go back and make it better or whatever. I'm saying we never had any freedom, right?
Okay.
And we never had any freedom. All right, so his mindset and our mindset cannot overlap. Now, there may be, maybe, with severe scrutinizing, this is where the question of a black political party becomes important, because the party can negotiate, given the fact that we are, in some regards, in an environment that is materially controlled by Europeans, but at the same time, we do have the leverage of holding our dollar and holding our votes and holding back some other things as the Europeans fight among themselves. You understand
exactly
what I'm saying? The Europeans are fighting among ourselves. We have some leverage to say which European will win. But we got to be a collective, all right, and firm on that, and we're not at this point. And so, last point I want to make with the little bit of seconds I got. The reparation issue that the Pew talk about, reparation for slavery. Look at this trick language here. Discussions about atonement. Atonement? What do you mean atonement? You know, I want reparation. All right. So they go up here, all right. You say, well, what are you talking about? What does atonement mean? You know, all right. Excuse me. It means, is the concept of a person taking action, a person taking action to correct previous wrongdoing on their part, a person taking action. We're talking about a group of people who created harm and injury and stole from another group of people, kidnapped them. In fact, some say, depending on what circle you're in, I tend to agree with it, that it was an intentional invasion of the African continent precipitated by a Pope's bull, the Roman Catholic Church in 1452, Pope Louis, I believe that was his name, all right, to declare war and make enslave all infidels, that's Muslims, and pagans, that's Africans, all right? In other words, he was directing it towards the African continent, all right? All right, and some people say, well, he declared war, and that forever, after declaring that war, perpetuated continuous enslavement on the people who had been kidnapped or the people who are prisoners as a consequence of the invasion by the Europeans. All right, so but anyway, atonement, trick language. All right, then it goes on to say, the atonement for enslavement of black Americans. What's that mean? There were no black Americans. We didn't become American, so-called, until 1865. He says the enslavement of black Americans. This is the Pew Report. Now, this is supposed to be, a think tank. You know, put out this stuff.
Right.
And this idiot is going to say, this group of author's going to say, reparation for slavery, discussions about atonement for the enslavement of black Americans. We weren't Americans. We were enslaved.
Exactly.
And in fact, we were pseudo-slaves when they started putting their convict leasing stuff in, because we were free enslaved. All right. Most famously, he talked about German T. Sherman's drafted the Special Field Order 15 in 1865. The order stipulated that Confederate land seized in Georgia and South Carolina would be split among formerly enslaved black people, all right, in those states, which came out with no more than 40 acres per family. That means no more than 40 acres per family. You could get up to 40 acres, but you could get. And that's why a number of freemen got a lot of land as a consequence of that. All right. All right. So they got the land. And then when it was repealed a few months later after Lincoln was killed, all right, they took that away. And and then they've been slowly taking land away over the 100 and nearly 60 years. All right. The Musing didn't come into contract, which is out of context, because the Musing was from the Freedmen's Bureau, which is part of the U.S. government, and they threw in a mule, all right, so that you could have at least some tools to begin to work the land so that you could earn a living. All right. So they talk about efforts towards reparations have continued into the 21st century. All right. There's no mention of NCOBRA. All right. There's no mention of the PGRNA, which formed NCOBRA back there in the 1980s. All right. But, so we're in the 21st century, and they talk about in 2021, Evanston, Illinois became the first city to create a reparations plan for its black residents. All right. It was basically built on, taxes from marijuana. All right. And then in 2022, Harvard University created a $100 million fund. That's peanuts. For who? I mean, they look at us and say, we're stupid.
And that's $3
right?
a piece.
And our leadership. Yeah. And so my point is, as Brother Auntie said, we have to take control of our community and the environment in which we live. All right.
Mm-hmm.
ULU has created what we call UBCs. All right. ULU-based communities, all right? These ULU-based communities, 15 to 20 people, all right, are to establish themselves as a community, develop the kind of know-how, all right, and knowledge to assess the community at large, all right? So they have to be sustained, all right, and then they have to know, and then they have to precariously begin to see what are the means and pools of resources that I can gather, all right, to invest wisely as a collective, collective, not individual. All right, we have entrepreneurs, and I'm not saying anything against the entrepreneurs, but right now the entrepreneurs have not been successfully able to hire all of us. All right, it's all we are discriminated against as a consequence of being to a group. All right, so therefore we need a strategy, all right, that attempts to alleviate the economic condition, socioeconomic condition, a group strategy. Not necessarily individual strategy, because we've always had individuals. We had freemen during the time of the enslavement period. All right, so we've always had individuals that had prospered, but as a group, we need a group strategy, and ULU provides that group strategy. The UBCs would become integrated into the communities that they are a part. They would learn about the community that they are a part. All right, they would work, form alliances, work with potential businesses of the community in which they were a part, while at the same time sustaining the value system that will help to create and sustain us, while the other system outside is the dominating, in this hellish way. So I know we're running out of time, but that's the key, is that we see the pessimism because we don't see an outlook that is favorable to us. ULU provides that outlook. It means then what Farrakhan said, we got to stop wasting our money. Yes, it's advantageous and convenient for me to go, and I don't want to be hard on the sisters, but they just I'm going to be hard on you. You can be hard on me, sister. You got to not necessarily go to the Korean place and get your nails done. You know, prop up a black businesses and demand that they give you the kind of service and don't, and not the disrespect that you sometimes get going to the Korean or Asian place to get your nails done. All right, that's mm-hmm. what we have to demand, and that's what we have to respect. But sister, I know you're running out of time, and I know you're tired. But I really appreciate the opportunity you've given me to you talk about this. And we really need to have probably a little bit more talk on that fifth generation of warfare, being a little bit more that keeps us consciously always going to those places and entities that create pain for ourselves. We got to change that dynamic. Thank you.
For sure. For sure. Thank you, Brother Shabaka. Thank everyone that joined us this evening, Brother Ankti and Brother Thurman, for calling in and adding to the pot. We invite you to join us again next Thursday evening from 9 p.m. Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
But God bless the child that got his own, that got his own. Yes, the strong gets more while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets don't ever make the grave. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Money, you got lots of friends crowding round the door. When you're gone and spending ends, they don't come no more. Rich relationship, crust of bread and such, you can help yourself, but don't take too much. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God